one.
You just split this.
Okay, so I'm going to be continuing Rajesh's talk earlier in the morning. My talk is titled Non-Commutative Solitons 2, and almost everything I say is presented in detail in this paper, which was written in collaboration with Meena Aganachik, Rajesh Gopakumar, and Andrew Strominger. Okay. I will be describing solitons in non-commutative gauge theories and some of their applications. But before I can go on to the main topic of my talk, I will briefly review non-commutative gauge theories. So what is a non-commutative gauge theory? Well, like any gauge theory, a non-commutative gauge theory is a field theory defined by an action of the Maxwell form, the Yang-Mills form. So the action is the integral of the trace of F squared. And F, as is usual in gauge theories, is the commutator of two covariant derivatives. Okay. A covariant derivative is defined as the sum of a derivative and the commutator with a connection for a field in the adjoint. So all that is completely usual. What makes this theory non-commutative is that the product that is taken in the definition of the commutator, so the product that is used in defining the commutator involves both the matrix as well as the star product. Okay? So the matrix A commutator B, the ikth component of the matrix A commutator B, is Aij star Bjk minus Bij star Aik, Ajk that should be. Sorry. So the product in the commutator involves both matrix product as well as star product. Okay. So this, of course, changes the nature of this non-commutative gauge theory very much as compared to its commutative counterpart. And an amusing and interesting and important feature of non-commutative gauge theories is that the U1 theory is by itself non-trivial. You see, the commutator of two U1 fields doesn't vanish because the star product is non-commutative. And so the U1 theory is by itself non-trivial. The Lagrangian for the U1 theory is quartic rather than quadratic in fields. And so it's perhaps not surprising, and it's true, that all the interesting qualitative features of the UN non-commutative gauge theory can also be found in the U1 non-commutative gauge theory. So for most of my talk, I will restrict attention to the U1 non-commutative gauge theory. Okay. When studying this gauge theory or any other non-commutative gauge theory, which has the feature that all its fields are in the adjoint of the gauge group, a particular observation is really useful in the study. And that observation is the following. The observation is that the derivative of any field phi can be written as the star commutator of that field phi with a fixed function. Okay? So this statement here is just a simple algebraic statement. It follows from the definition of the star product and takes 10 seconds to verify algebraically. However, it is extremely, extremely important and extremely useful in what follows. See, it has an immediate consequence. Consider the covariant derivative of a field phi that is in the adjoint of the gauge group. Okay. So that covariant derivative is, the derivative of the field plus I times A times the commutator, plus I times A commutator, that field. But we've just argued that the derivative of the field is the commutator of a fixed function with that field. Therefore, the covariant derivative of this field phi can be written as the commutator of a new field, which I'm going to call C mu, with phi, where C mu is the old gauge field, A mu, plus the fixed function that mimics the action of the derivative. Okay, so that's really nice. In particular, the field strength is, as usual, a commutator of two covariant derivatives. There's a shift here that's quite important, and I won't explain why it happens, but it's almost the commutator of these two C mu's, okay? And so the Yang-Mills action, which was just the integral of the trace of F squared, is simply C mu commutator C mu plus the shift term, the whole thing squared, integrated. Notice that this action has no explicit derivatives in it. Okay? So there's no explicit kinetic term in this action. Of course, the action has derivatives implicitly. It's not an ultra-local theory. But all derivatives that appear in the action appear through the star product. So appear only implicitly through the star product. Okay, so this action looks like it's purely algebraic. It has no derivatives, no kinetic term. And that makes it particularly simple to study. Okay? If you remember the morning's talk, Rajesh took the limit theta to infinity in order to drop kinetic terms in scalar field theories. We didn't have to do that. A simple shift of fields in this non-commutative gauge theory achieves the same effect. Okay? So there is a sense in which the non-commutative gauge theory is simpler than its scalar counterpart. This might lead you to hope that one can find exact solutions, exact solitons in non-commutative gauge theories, so solitons that are exact solutions to the equations of motion at arbitrary finite theta. This hope is indeed realizable. And in the next 10 minutes of this talk, I'm going to find such a solution and describe some of its properties. But before going on to find solutions for to this non-commutative gauge theory, it's convenient to rewrite this non-commutative theory in terms of operators. So again, this is something Rajesh has reviewed in the morning, but I just make the statement again. If you consider a 2 plus 1 dimensional theory with purely spatial non-commutativity, okay, we're considering time-independent solutions. We are interested in time-independent solutions to the equations of motion of this theory. So effectively, this is a 2-dimensional theory with spatial non-commutativity. Well, there is a 1-to-1 correspondence between fields in such a theory and operators in the quantum mechanics, in the Hilbert space of the quantum mechanics of a particle moving in one dimension. Okay? So there's 1-to-1 map between fields in 2 dimensions and operators in this Hilbert space, such that the star product of these fields maps to the usual operator product under the under this identification. This identification also has certain other nice properties that Rajesh has reviewed this morning. Okay. So I make the switch from fields to operators. So in terms of the operators, the action, or really minus the Lagrangian, the energy functional, because I'm worrying only about time-independent field configurations. And now I've specialized to the gauge A0 equals 0. I'm in 2 plus 1 dimensions. I've also moved to complex coordinates. So C here is Cx plus ICy. C bar is its complex conjugate. Okay? So the action, or the energy functional, is some constant times the trace of C commutator C bar plus theta inverse, the whole thing squared. Okay. Well, so this is 2 plus 1 dimensional non-commutative Yang-Mills. Before going on to study interesting solutions of this theory, we first ask, what is the vacuum of this theory? Well, the vacuum of the theory in the usual variables is A equals 0. Translating that into C by adding the shift function, that translates to the solution C equals A dagger, where A dagger is just a usual creation operator, quantum mechanical creation operator. Remember, now we're working with operators in the Hilbert space of quantum mechanics of a particle in one dimension. So A dagger is a creation operator, slightly funnily normalized. A commutator A dagger is 1 over theta rather than 1 in my conventions. Okay, so that is the vacuum of the theory. And I'm going to now produce a non-trivial solution to the equations of motion of this 2 plus 1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory by acting on this vacuum by something that is almost a gauge transformation. Okay? So I'm going to compound this vacuum solution with S dagger to the power m from the left and S to the power m from the right, where S is almost a unitary operator. Okay. In particular, S is what's called the shift operator. It's defined in this equation for you. And obeys the following, these two algebraic relations. S times S dagger is 1. But S dagger times S is not quite 1. It fails to be 1 by an additional projection operator. So this P0 is the projector onto the ground state of the quantum mechanics under consideration. Okay. Had S dagger S also been 1, then the field configuration we'd have obtained by S daggering and S-ing our vacuum solution would just have been gauge equivalent to the vacuum, and so would have been the vacuum itself. That would have been boring. However, S is not quite a unitary operator. You see that from this equation. Okay. Nonetheless, it is possible to show that this field configuration continues to obey the equations of motion of the Yang-Mills theory. So it is a solution to the equations for motion of Yang-Mills theory that is not gauge equivalent to the vacuum, so it is an interesting solution. I'm now going to study the solution in some detail. Firstly, remember that the flux operator, f mu nu, was the commutator of c mu with c nu plus a shift. In 2 plus 1 dimensions in the A0 equals 0 gauge, there's just one interesting flux, one interesting index combination. And that's essentially given by, well, the commutator of c with c bar plus a shift. Let's compute this flux for the configuration or the solution to the equations of motion I've described above. Plugging in for plugging in for c and using these algebraic properties of s, I find that the flux is, well, s dagger to the m, a dagger commutator a, s to the m plus 1 over theta. But a dagger commutator a is minus 1 over theta. And then using this relation and iterating it and doing some algebra, we find that this flux operator here is the projector onto the first m eigenstates of the harmonic oscillator divided by theta. Okay, so this solution is not the vacuum. In particular, it has non-trivial flux. And this is the flux operator associated with that solution. To make things specific, let's consider the case m equals 1. Then translating back from operators to field configurations, the flux is 2 times e to the power minus r squared by theta divided by theta. So it's a Gaussian, a Gaussian flux lump sitting at the origin. Okay. The integrated flux, the first churn number corresponding to the solution, is 1 over 2 pi times the integral of f, which using the dictionary between fields and operators can be translated into, well, theta divided by theta, so that's 1 times trace of Pm. But Pm is an n-dimensional projection operator, so that's just m. So our solution of the solution carries m units of flux. Okay, so I'll summarize what I've said. We have found a new non-trivial solution to the equations of motion of 2 plus 1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory. It's a static solution, so it's a soliton. And it's a lump containing m units of flux, which I have not shown this, but is actually spread over an area m times theta. Theta is the non-commutativity scale in our theory. Okay, so that's nice. But can one find, I mean, is it more than nice? Does the solution have some use? I'm now going to argue in the next 5 minutes or so that there is a very direct application to the solution, that this solution actually interestingly describes, well, an interesting situation in string theory. Okay. In order to make that argument, I'm going to ask you to recall that the D2 brain, that the world volume theory on a D2 brain in the presence of a large B field is non-commutative super Yang-Mills plus alpha prime corrections. Okay? I'm going to be concentrating on, well, the Seiberg-Witten limit. In particular, the limit alpha prime B is much, much larger than G. So, what is B and what is G? We have D2 brain. B is the NSNS2 form field potential in the spatial direction of the D2 brain. The metric is diagonal in these spatial directions, and the coefficient of the diagonal piece is G. Okay? So I'm going to be concentrating on the Seiberg-Witten limit, the limit of large B field, which sort of is defined in this way. In this limit, it turns out that the parameters that govern the world volume theory in the D2 brain are theta, the non-commutativity scale, which is 1 over B, and the open string metric, which is given by this formula here. I've written down these formulae so that you can convince yourself that theta squared, the square of theta, the non-commutativity tensor, contracted with the appropriate number of powers of the open string metric, is alpha prime squared times an object that is much, much larger than 1 in the Seiberg-Witten limit. Okay? So, of course, the Seiberg-Witten limit is a limit in which non-commutativity scale is much larger than the string scale. Okay, so this has an important consequence. Any solution to the equations of motion of super Yang-Mills theory that is off-scale non-commutativity will necessarily also be a solution to the equations of motion of, well, the string field theory equations of motion of the D2 brain in the Seiberg-Witten limit, because the theory governing the world volume fluctuations of the D2 brain in this limit is non-commutative Yang-Mills plus alpha prime corrections, but alpha prime corrections are negligible for solutions that are so big. that are on the scale of non-commutativity, much larger scale than the string scale. Okay, so the solution we found must represent a solution to the equations of motion on the world volume of the D2 brain in the Seiberg-Witten limit. Well, what could the solution represent? Recall that this lump had m units of flux and hence n units of D0 brain charge. These m units of flux were localized at the origin. Hence, it is natural to guess that the solution that we've constructed represents m D0 brains sitting coincidentally at the origin on top of the D2 brain. I emphasize that the solution is 0 brains sitting on top of the D2 brain. These 0 brains have not dissolved into the D2 brain like they want to do. We come back to this in a minute. Okay, but before we talk, okay. So this is the interpretation I proposed to give the solution in this particular context I've talked about. One can perform various checks of this interpretation. Firstly, one can compare the energy of our solution, which is easy to calculate in the field theory, with the binding energy of the 0 brain on top of the 2 brain. It's an easy comparison to do, and these two energies agree exactly. A more impressive test of this conjecture is to compare the spectrum of small fluctuations on the two sides of the conjecture. The M0 brain sitting on top of a 2 brain in the presence of a large B field in the Seiberg-Witten limit is described by a conformal field theory. So it's a conformal field theory that is under complete control. You can compute the fluctuation spectrum of this theory. And in this particular limit, it turns out that rather surprisingly, instead of getting a Hagedorn spectrum of string states, because of the limit we're taking, we're essentially taking alpha prime to 0, one is left with a much smaller spectrum of states, but not a trivial spectrum. In fact, the spectrum contains linear harmonic oscillator towers of states. You can also compute the spectrum of small fluctuations about the solitonic solution that I presented. It turns out that these two spectra are exactly the same in all details. So I think that is rather convincing evidence for the identification of our solution with 0 brains on top of a 2 brain. Okay, so we've talked about 0 brains on 2 brains, but our solutions are a little more powerful than that. They enable us to talk about 0 brains off 2 brains. Okay, what do I mean by that? If you have 0 brains sitting on top of a 2 brain, you know that classically, in classical open string field theory, they can be separated away from the 0 brain at no cost. Okay? So the situation with 0 brains sitting on top of 2 brains must be a single point in a large moduli space of solutions, the moduli space representing the various positions of the 0 brains in the world volume directions of the 2 brain and transversely of the 2 brain. Okay, can we see this in our field theory analysis? Yes, we can. Once we remember that the theory in the 2 brain is not just super Yang-Mills theory, is not just non-commutative Yang-Mills theory, but is non-commutative super Yang-Mills with 16 supercharges, and in particular contains 7 extra scalar fields. Okay, so one can generalize the solution that I wrote down in the previous transparency. I won't really go through the details of this generalization, but this generalization includes a whole moduli space of solutions, of which the solution I wrote down in the previous transparency is a single point. The moduli space is spanned by, well, various numbers that can be interpreted as the positions of the MD0 brains. And the interpretations of these numbers as representing the positions of the MD0 brains can be verified by performing a fluctuation analysis about these new solutions, matching with the fluctuation analysis, matching with the conformal field theory representing 0 brains separated away from each other and away from the 2 brain. It all works perfectly. Okay. So our field theory enables us not just to study 0 brains on 2 brains, but 0 brains away from 2 brains as well. That's quite a lot of fun. Okay. So far, really, I have suppressed perhaps the most important qualitative feature of our solution from you. And this feature is the following. The solution is unstable. That it's unstable is rather easy to understand. If you take a lump of flux and localize it, this flux wants to reduce its energy as much as possible. And we know that in 2 plus 1 dimensions, flux has as little a flux gains its minimum energy by spreading out to the maximum possible extent. Okay, so our solution is a lump of flux localized. It wants to spread out. And this is reflected in tachyonic mode in our solution. This tachyonic mode can be explicitly determined. And we did determine it when we performed our fluctuation analysis about the solution. This, of course, also matches with the fact that the solution represents a 0 brain sitting on top of a 2 brain, because 0 brains on a 2 brain have a tachyon. This tachyon represents the desire of the 0 brains to dissolve into the 2 brains. Okay. I want to emphasize one more thing, however. in the Seiberg-Witten limit, zero brains and two brains have a tachyon that that has a mass 1 over theta rather than 1 over alpha prime. A mass square that is 1 over theta rather than 1 over alpha prime. That's quite important. If the tachyon had a mass square 1 over alpha prime, in the Seiberg-Witten limit, this tachyon would be out of the validity range of our field theory. However, theta is a field theory scale, so the tachyon has a mass that is, or that can be studied well within the field theory. And so in particular, this is a nice system, which includes a tachyon of the kind that has been studied with great interest recently in string theory, that can be studied completely in all details within an effective field theory, namely non-commutative Yang-Mills. Okay, so these are some of the things we could do using this fact. We can integrate out all the other fluctuations, about our solution other than the tachyon, and find an exact tachyon potential. Okay, so now it turns out that this tachyon potential has many branches, but on one branch you can perform this integration out exactly. This is the result. You get a sort of quartic potential for this tachyon. Okay. Secondly, you can follow the tachyon condensation to its endpoint. You can do that really explicitly. You can watch what happens when it rolls down to its minimum and show that it corresponds to flux spreading out to infinity. That's not a surprise, but it's nice to be able to do explicitly. And lastly, in this situation, you can answer the tantalizing question, where do the 0,0 and 0,2 strings go? So I remind you what this question was. Where we start off with a situation with zero brains on two brains. We end up at the end of tachyon condensation with only two brains. So originally we have 0,0, 0,2, and 2,2 strings. At the end of the day, we have only 2,2 strings. You could ask the question, well, where have the 0,0 and 0,2 strings gone? Can we follow these modes as the tachyon condenses down to its minimum? You can very explicitly in this situation, but the answer is a little boring, I'm afraid. The answer is that these modes just disappear into the continuum of 2,2 modes. As the tachyon condenses down to its minimum. That's boring because this answer cannot have an analog in the more interesting cases of, say, D-D-bar condensation, because there is no continuum that we know of for, let's say, the D-D-bar strings to disappear into. Okay, I'm going to now switch gears a little bit and talk about a slight generalization of the story I've been outlining here. I'm going to now talk about zero brains and four brains. So I've been talking about zero brains and two brains. Now I'm going to talk about new solutions in 4+1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory that will represent zero brains and four brains. Okay? So, consider 4+1 dimensional non-commutative super Yang-Mills theory in the A0 equals 0 gauge. We have four fields, which can be paired into complex conjugates. Once again, these fields can be shifted away to mimic the action of the derivative. So you get four new shifted fields. The fields this time can be mapped to operators. Well, it's got to be a bigger operator space than last time. In fact, it's going to be the operator space of a particle. Well, the operator space of the quantum of the Hilbert space of quantum mechanics of a particle moving in two dimensions, or one or two particles moving in one dimension. Okay. So I'm going to go quickly through this because it sort of mimics what we've seen before. The vacuum in this case is the field C1 is equal to A1 dagger. C2 equals A2 dagger. Remember, there are now two different distinct Hilbert spaces. Our Hilbert space is the tensor product of two copies. So this one acts on the first copy, this one on the second. Okay. Using the technique behind, we can generate a new solution, a new non-trivial solution to the equations of motion of 4+1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory. We once again compound the vacuum solution by a shift operator. The shift operator is defined as behind. However, in order to tell you exactly what the shift operator is, I need to impose an ordering on my basis of this Hilbert space. Since it's a tensor product of two Hilbert spaces, there's no natural ordering, but it turns out it doesn't matter. All various shift operators are related by a gauge transformation. Okay. So that operation once again gives you a new non-trivial solution to the equations of motion of 4+1 dimensional Yang-Mills theory, and it is an interesting solution. This solution, like the 2+1 dimensional solution, has non-trivial topology. In particular, the field strength corresponding to the solution turns out to be what I've written above up here. And the first point, Kragen number, corresponding to this field strength is easy to calculate, turns out to be plus or minus 1. Okay? So, so then this solution represents a single zero brain sitting on top of a four brain in the appropriate Cyber-Witten limit. Okay, so this is a conjecture, but it can be checked as behind. A simple check is to match energies on both sides. Energies match. I now want to hurry up, very quickly tell you about some new features of these solutions that were not present in the two-dimensional case. Firstly, notice that these solutions are not necessarily unstable. In order to see that, note that if theta is either self-dual or anti-self-dual, F here is also self-dual or anti-self-dual. And so in the supersymmetric version of this theory, the solution would be BPS and hence stable. Okay? So there are special cases, the special cases of theta being self-dual or anti-self-dual, in which our solutions here are stable. They're BPS solutions. When theta is neither self-dual nor anti-self-dual, this solution is not BPS. In particular, it turns out to be unstable to decay into the BPS solution with the same charge. In my last minute or two, I'm going to now tell you how these solutions complete the picture of non-commutative instantons in Yang-Mills theory. So we've been finding time-independent solutions of 4 plus 1-dimensional Yang-Mills theory, same thing as finding instantonic solutions of 4-dimensional Yang-Mills theory. I'm going to remind you what we all know about that. Consider the U2 non-commutative Yang-Mills theory. According to a paper by Cyberg and Witten 1.5 years ago, the moduli space of self-dual instantons in this theory is a function only of theta minus. Okay? So we'll study a special case. Let's take theta plus to be 0, theta minus to be non-zero. So this is self-dual non-commutativity. And the self-dual instanton moduli space is, in this case, is smoothened out. It's smoothened out as compared to the singular moduli space which would have been present at theta minus equals 0. Yeah, here we have here the small instanton singularity, sort of the leaking out possibility of the instantons. This sort of instanton moduli space is smoothened out. And then in a very nice paper by Nekrasov and Schwartz more than 2 years ago, the instantonic solutions everywhere in this moduli space were explicitly found using the ADHM construction. They're everywhere smooth, but of course very nice, but it's not surprising. It's not surprising to find smooth solutions in a smooth moduli space. Okay, but now let's concentrate again on the same special case, theta plus equals 0, theta minus not equals 0. But now consider the moduli space of anti-self-dual instantons. Consider anti-self-dual instantons in this special case. Well, we know from the Cyberg-Witten argument that the moduli space of such instantons is unaffected by non-commutativity. However, the solutions themselves are certainly modified by this non-commutativity. And in fact, I propose that the solution that I've just presented 5 minutes ago, in fact, represents the instanton at the singular point in moduli space. So a very close neighbor of that solution. You have to give some U2 index structure, but okay. This conjecture has been verified by a nice calculation by Furucci, which he performed the ADHM construction for instantons, for anti-self-dual instantons everywhere on the moduli space in this particular special case, and found that at the singular point, his solution indeed reduces to the one I presented 5 minutes ago. So that's quite nice. This entire moduli space, this entire A singular moduli space is everywhere implemented by smooth non-singular solutions, including at the singular point in moduli space. I don't know if that's important, but it's amusing anyway. Thank you.
Questions, please? There are no questions. We'll thank the speaker.